We acknowledge that we are on the traditional lands of the Kulin Nation. We pay our respects to elders, past, present, and emerging, and acknowledge the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples' spirit, imagination, and rich history of storytelling and humour that is an inspiration for all Australians.
Hello there, guys. Welcome back to the Bearer of Weird News, your locally sourced, farm-to-table, independent news satirist. We make fun of the news because they make it so damn easy. It's just out of election season here in Australia, if you still believe in such childish dreams as a free and fair democracy. But for the rest of us, we are generally like adults on Christmas morning. We stayed up all night, dreading the mess that would come after a full day of complete lack of surprises, as Father Newsmas himself, Uncle Rupert Murdoch, attempts to come down your chimney, or more realistically, your landlord's chimney, in his sleigh made of newspaper pulled by his 8 reindeer of the apocalypse, on liar, on deception, on manipulation, on false representation of pie charts, on bribery, on intimidation, on homogenization of opinion, and don't forget the most important reindeer of them all, on capitalism, the green-nosed reindeer, who leads the sleigh with his luminous brightness. It's a wonderful time to be here in Australia. Which is why I'm heading off to Edinburgh to do the Edinburgh Festival. It's now official. I've got a venue. For anyone who's interested in coming and checking it out, I'll be at Cannon's Gate, halfway down, which is one of the spaces within the Cannon's Gate venue. I'll be doing my show at 9 p.m. as part of the free fringe, which means that you get to come and pay what you feel. So come, make a judgment call. And put some money in the bucket, please, because I'm traveling a long way to come do this show. The show is my storytelling show, I Got Bit by a Monkey Once, which is a storytelling show with 4 stories: a monkey bite, a bus trip across America, a mugging, and an arrest. So if you're interested in checking out the storytelling show, come see that. I'll also be doing the same show, I Got Bit by a Monkey Once, in Albany, in Western Australia, on June 17th. We'll hopefully be able to do 2 shows that evening, depending on ticket sales. So if you know anyone who lives in Albany, it's a bit of a trip out. It's a bit of a ways away. If you're close, if you're within 500 kilometres of Albany, which is how far it is from Perth, feel free to take a road trip out and come and suss out the show. That one, tickets will be $25. But I'm really looking forward to it. I think it should be a fun night. I'm looking forward to getting out and touring a little more regionally and going to some different places, and this is the first step in that direction. But for now, I will be the bearer of weird news. So let's start things off with headlines. Finfluencers, who are influencers who give unregulated financial advice and sit atop of the crypto pyramid schemes, and will not hesitate to message you, a stranger, for an opportunity to invest $7,000 with them, also a stranger, on TikTok, like it's a completely normal thing to do. Yes, that genuinely happened to me. Well, finfluencers have come under the eyes of the corporate watchdog ASIC, who are cracking down on unlicensed financial advice, or they could end up in jail, or with a $1 million fine. But don't worry, guys. They can get that fine paid off nice and quick. All you gotta do is give them $1,000 to invest in Bitcoin, and you'll get 10% of your fine money invested in a great opportunity for you. Saltwater crocodiles in Australia's Northern Territory are thriving, according to research published in the science journal Biology Letters, due to a change in diet, primarily consisting of feral hogs. When he heard about it, Scott Morrison instantly started to decry the reptiles for outrageous pork barreling, saying it was becoming increasingly complicated to get much-needed resources to the territory when crocodiles would take the whole hog. Larry Gagosian bought Andy Warhol's Marilyn Monroe painting for a record-breaking $280 million at auction. He's going to be upset when he finds out how many of them there are, though. Probably didn't have to spend so much money. Like, there's a ton of those things. They're everywhere. After revelations that the Brazilian military had bought 35,000 Viagra pills for its troops, a lawmaker claimed it had also acquired 60 inflatable silicone penile implants at a cost of between 50,000 and 60,000 reals, which has come to about 10,600 or 12,800 Australian dollars for 3 different military hospitals. After years of devastation in the Amazon and years in front of the International Corruption Commission, this discovery of public funding for Wangs is actually a pretty light discovery, and lawmakers shouldn't be so hard on the president. He's just ensuring that they have a strong and firm military. Bolsonaro claims the claim is overblown, and that they only purchased 3 silicone penises, not 60. And that reports should make sure that they have the hard facts before coming down hard on the troops and erecting a story like this. They simply want their troops to give the enemy a hard time. After all, what is the point of the military if it doesn't go hard? It's either go hard or go home, and they aren't going home. WA Minister for Indigenous Australians Ken Wyan, who earns about $7,109 a week, said that politicians deserve a pay rise. Oh man, is he going to be so mad if he ever discovers how much frontline workers earn? It's going to be through the roof, he's not going to be able to believe it. According to sanctions expert, the UK remains a world leader in hiding dirty money, giving Australia a run for its dirty money, as it comes for the title that we've been so desperately holding as the go-to destination for laundering and dirty money. But the UK is battling hard as it rolls out the green carpet for money launderers, encouraging them to seek shelter in the island nation. That they are a centre of growing industry, and no other development area can offer so much. It's a real land of opportunity, encouraging people that we know just the place to hide your funds, leaving Australia to wonder about its dirty money investors, leaving them thinking,
so where the bloody hell are you?
Australian National Olympics Committee official John Coates has said, to a large extent, that Sydney was awarded the Summer Olympics Games in 2000 because it bought the games from African nations Kenya and Uganda. Both African nations have since been furious that they were robbed of the opportunity to lose $2.1 billion and fill landfills with Olympic-themed merchandise that will choke a dolphin in 50 years when the country floods. It's just outrageous, eh? These opportunities don't come every day. The Prime Minister's office has refused to release any text messages between Scott Morrison and prominent QAnon supporter Tim Stewart, claiming they are not official government documents, following a 2-year Freedom of Information battle. If this proves successful, it will form the basis for excusing his entire Prime Ministership from being investigated, because nothing that he has ever done counts as official government action. The Greens have announced a plan to end all extinctions by 2030 and create an independent COP to enforce stronger environmental laws as part of their $24 billion Green Australia policy. The independent COP will be more of a Dirty Harry character who will be throwing out the rulebook and bringing into question the system and taking the law into their own roguish hands. Though often a single agitator, no matter how iconic and genre-defining they are, isn't enough to make real change. So to fight this environmental war, we will increase defence spending, providing tanks and submarines for koalas to fight fossil fuel companies directly. However, given our inability to effectively build an army and have it ready in time to fight in any actual conflicts in which we may need them, we will also source an alternative path, one that we have been very good at in the past and have successfully implemented in multiple locations around the world. The Greens will end all extinctions by teaching koalas to run pro-Liberal Party newspaper empires, showering the environmentally neglectful major party in praise and clearly bootlicking statements about being superior environmental managers. This will have a trickle-down effect of directly providing the koalas with the desperately needed funding for protecting the environment, as it is now of national interest. Moving on now to some of our biggest stories. It is election 2022 news. The election. The biggest opportunity you have to take part in democracy and get your artistic skills on display for a captive audience that you can take part in at a national level. The 2019 election was infamously plagued with troubled and ultimately unpunished lies and deceptive signs about voting, preferences, and what exactly political parties are planning for the future of Australia. And so far, 2022 has taken a bit of a different route, mostly focusing on facts and figures being able to be recalled at a moment's notice, like we're running a national spelling bee and not a national election that actually will impact the lives of people who partake in it and will potentially leave them in a much better or much worse position depending on the government and crossbench that gets elected. Who would have thought? But no. Let's focus on the one thing that most people hated about their other national shared experience, the endless reiterating of useless facts without reference in educational institutions. That's not to say that the election hasn't had its share of deceptive practices. So first up, attack ads targeting Labor are being published on the Chinese language social networking platform WeChat, raising concerns that misinformation could be circulating as the ads contain no authorization or party attribution, which is actually a legal requirement for ads during a campaign, so that we know who is being dirty and make sure to elect them as they clearly care the most. Why else would they work so hard for it? They have a clear grasp of Australian law and know how to circumvent it, which is what we really want in a party, someone willing to be bold and fight the rules that have been put in place that have caused Australia to become the most livable dictatorship in the world. The AEC is also investigating hundreds of fake campaign signs that were put up in Liberal electorates, Warringah, McKellar, Hughes and Hume, falsely suggesting independent candidates were members of the Greens. As always, the crime is not the attempted distortion of an election through deceptive practices, but that the new posters did not carry any authorisation message as required by the AEC. A Queensland Liberal National Party candidate has been referred to the Australian Federal Police over allegations he provided false information about his residential address. The coalition campaign has not said whether it will continue supporting Lobo in Lilly. Instead, they will wait to see if he has that same legal Teflon ability to deflect controversy, preferably onto the Labor Party, that the LNP requires of all of its candidates. If Lobo can obtain a legally dubious donation for legal fees, this will tip him in favour of receiving their support. So it's up to you, Lobo, or anybody else willing to throw the money out there. One Nation has revealed to be scrambling to find people to run for the federal election just hours before the close of nominations, even telling one prospective candidate to leave the electorate he was running in blank on his form, presumably that way they could just fill it in like Mad Libs. Because everybody loves Mad Libs. Let's do one right now. Let's do one together. Pauline went to the Senate where she called, insert minority group, a bunch of adjective slur. In her defense, she doubled down by verb adverb in the Senate, calling different minority group liars who were out to undermine white Australia by verb. Send your answers to the bearer of weird news via carrier pigeon with the leg message fun time fill in the blanks competition. The most believable answers will be used to fill the One Nation seats next election as a sleeper cell to take them down from the inside. Guardian Australia has also revealed several of the candidates chosen to run for the party live not only in other electorates, they live in other states, which seems to run against Hanson's oldest and most vocal concern, respecting Australian borders. While there is no law against candidates living outside of a seat or state where they are running in, and there is nothing that requires a candidate to be active in campaigning or election, it seems pretty clear to us at the bearer of weird news that this is a cash grab for first preference vote refunds that mean the party will have more money in the future, as more first preference votes means that they can get a bigger amount that they can write off, right? So I'm not directly accusing them of doing that. But the pieces certainly do seem to fit together better than the DC Cinematic Universe. Which, by the way, is the reason to always vote preference, even if you don't think your party will win. They get a better chance the next election. There is no joke here. This is just something that you need to understand about preferential voting. See, we as a nation, we sort of struggle with it a little bit, and we need to end that narrative that parties can have any control whatsoever over your voting preferences. It is not true anymore. It's not a thing. It is definitely not a thing anymore. The election is the labyrinth. The parties are like Jareth, and you are Sarah. They have no power over your voting preferences. Your voting preferences. Your voting preferences. Before all this came to light, Guardian Australia had revealed One Nation candidate nominated to run in Banks claimed that he had no idea he was running in the New South Wales seat, which is the kind of intimate attention to detail politics that we have come to expect and respect from Pauline Hanson, which is why she's so famous for asking for further details and clarification.
Please explain.
Speaking of One Nation, the AEC is investigating whether a website registered to a One Nation candidate and haunted photo you can actually hear asking to speak to your manager, Rebecca Lloyd, which solicited donations on behalf of freedom-fighting election hopefuls, and whether or not it has breached political authorization rules. There they are again, the old political authorization rules. The Join the Conversation website claims to be a platform to connect voters to local minor party candidates. However, it only allowed voters to see candidates from the UAP, One Nation, and the Great Australian Party, the electoral equivalent of the Bermuda Triangle, because votes go to them, and then they are never seen again. The site claims it lists candidates from all parties except those endorsed by Labor, the Liberals, the Nationals, and the Greens. But it doesn't even have the most unhinged of conspiracy theorists running in seats all over the nation as they risk siphoning off the valuable first preference extremist votes. We must have a united front when it comes to overthrowing the government from within. I mean, it's just simple, guys. We wouldn't want to see a series of mixed, confused, and overwhelmed people showing up to form one large group with mixed ideals, each trying to grift the others for their particular cause without consideration of collaboration, as they want to sit at the top of the conspiracy mountain as the queens of confusion. After all, this isn't a street-level protest. This is serious business. However, this ghost candidate business isn't concerning Barnaby Joyce, as he directed his preferences, which, again, as you are in control of your preferences, actually means nothing, except for him to show an unnecessary statement of intention. But I digress. He has directed his preferences to One Nation. The candidate in question is Man of Mystery Richard Thomas, who did not respond to the invitation to attend the candidate forum and didn't provide a photo for his promotional material. He's also not listed as a candidate on the party's website. Isn't that interesting? However, this isn't very out of character for Joyce, who is very much used to working with things that don't exist, as not a single report on the drought seems to have been produced while he was appointed as the nation's special drought envoy. But all eyes were on the leaders' debate, and what it could possibly tell us about the future of the nation. Well, after much talking over each other in a respectful and not at all concerning show of respect for the voices of others from the two major party candidates, the viewers were unleashed by Nine News to vote on who they thought was the winner. Who will they vote for? Will it be the Coalition, Labour, or the Coalition? Oh, whoops. seems there was a bit of a mix-up with the buttons there. Well, I mean, to be fair, there is a lot of buttons. No wonder the media tried so hard to basically turn this into a two-party race. They struggled to take control of three buttons, so the idea of having, you know, 13 or 14 different parties must really stagger them. The viewers spoke out, saying that they thought Morrison was the winner at 52% to 48%. Oh, well, that was until all of the votes were counted, which actually put Albanese in front 51% over Morrison at 49%. Now that that's all sorted, there's no need to get caught up with a small mistake like doubling the amount of buttons for one party. Oh, what's that? It's more breaking news. Oh, it turns out the debate is a dead heat. Actually, it's a dead heat. No, nobody won the leaders' debate. Yes, the leaders' debate results show that both candidates are equally uninspiring. During the debate, when asked if he had ever seen corruption on his side of politics, Morrison boldly responded, "No, I haven't." While panellist David Crowe gave the example of New South Wales branch funneling donations through the Free Enterprise Foundation to subvert state donation laws, Morrison replied that the question assumed he had some knowledge or awareness of involvement in those issues, setting an interesting precedent that as long as a politician doesn't read front page news stories alleging corruption in their own party, or have a press briefing that something had gone wrong majorly and that they would be dodging questions about this particular topic today, they can say that they've never seen it. Taking the "la la 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 la, I can't hear you" defense, which you don't see very often, but it seems to be strangely effective. Over in South Australia, a different battle is taking place, as South Australia's Department for Correctional Services has been taken to court for banning a newspaper distributed to Australian prisoners with election information. Now, for those wondering, like I was, prisoners in Australia who are serving a jail sentence of less than 3 years, it is still compulsory for them to vote. Those who are serving a jail sentence of more than 3 years must be enrolled, but are not actually allowed to vote. But while they are often working as prisoners, the rates paid to prisoners for work are so low, around $70 a week for a 30-hour week, it's not like they're getting taxed without representation. It's not like being a 15 or 16-year-old who, you know, picks up a surprising amount of shifts on the weekend, but maybe still has penalty rates, so actually gets a little bit of tax, but doesn't get representation because he doesn't have any voting rights. Now, prisoner advocate organisation Justice Action created a newspaper which was designed to provide information on political parties for prisoners across the country ahead of the federal election. The four-page newspaper with the excellent title, "Just Us," outlines statements from every party that details their commitments to prisoners if they were to be elected on the 21st of May. It was banned because Chief Executive of South Australia's Department of Correctional Services, David Brown, sent a letter saying that the contents of the newspaper could incite unrest or inspire conflict in the state's prisons. Wild and out-of-control statements like the Greens saying, "The legal system is too expensive and too hard to navigate, and often it's simply racist." Which I, as a person who's never been to prison, didn't definitely know for sure, but thought it was a fair assumption that they already knew, given that they were in the prison system themselves. But who knows? Maybe they're not aware yet. I'm not sure you can tell our 4.7% of all Indigenous men who are in jail compared with the just 0.3% of all non-Indigenous men, but they'd be terribly surprised to discover that particular fact. So maybe you just need to give them the voting information and not treat them like second-class citizens because they were desperate and put in a position of necessity and made a mistake. I'm sure that they'd love to hear about how Malcolm Turnbull said disgruntled Liberal voters are voting with their feet to support the independents because the influence of the party's moderate wing at the federal level was diminished and diminishing. And I'm sure they'd love to hear all the gossip about how Barnaby Joyce went further, accusing Turnbull of tossing out his former allegiance to the party that made him the PM, despite no more than a year ago he himself calling Morrison a liar and a hypocrite in leaked text messages. So when we here at the Borough of Weird News heard that this was going on, we realised that, well, we're not a newspaper, so we can be viewed on YouTube or listened to as a podcast. So if you know anybody in prison in South Australia, get them to have a listen to this as I give a rundown of the independent parties for the 2022 election, because I'm sure they already know about the major parties and the Greens. It's time for the minor parties. Okay, so you see here this chart of elected members of the Parliament across the national, state and territory legislature shows the country has had a relatively clear cycle of political change over the past 5 decades. Like, a real janky roller coaster for the major parties, which we all know are the best kind of roller coasters, the ones that hit with like a hard 90 degree angle either up or down. It also shows that there are now more than 100 independent or minor party representatives in those legislatures, those being the 151 MPs and 76 senators. This number is a record for modern post-Second World War party system. So with that increase in minor parties and independents on the rise, I'm going to go over the minor parties in Victoria specifically with you fine listeners. And sure, this is a little restrictive as it's only one state in Australia, and a state that, as far as the rest of the country is concerned, is actually rolling out the green carpet for our socialist overlords, the Greens, so they can destroy every industry with solar-powered robots who never need to sleep, so that they can transition all workers directly onto the teat of the state. But if there is a party who isn't running a candidate in Victoria, you can Bing them yourselves. I mean, you've got the internet right in front of you. Alright, so first up, it's Reason Australia. So these are formerly the Voluntary Euthanasia Party, which achieved its goal by causing the Sex Party and the Cyclist Party to die by fusing together and form Reason, led by Fiona Patten, who describes the party as a civil libertarian alternative with policies on taxing non-charity arms of churches, pill testing, drug decriminalisation and cannabis legalisation. They want to decriminalise sex work and set a maximum bet limit for poker machines and limiting the influence of pokies industry. Reasonable sounding ideas, but you will have to listen to libertarians, the atheists of political parties. So you'll need to balance between someone who might introduce strong good policy and someone who insists that crypto is the future, man. So, you know, it's a gamble either way. Next, on the very large white piece of paper, is an unnamed grouping. Probably so that the government can't track them, you know. Now, this is former Neighbours actor turned anti-vaxxer darling, Damien Richardson. He made a name for himself during the Melbourne rallies, and he's running on a platform of, I don't understand a lot of policies, and please don't take cash away. His running partner is John McBride, the self-described interested party and regular guest on podcast The Fifth Estate, where he talks his disillusionment with the gay agenda and extreme transgender movement leaving him behind. Even listening to this podcast at 1.5 speed is quite tedious to get through, so I do not recommend 1 star. The Australian Democrats make their return to politics after their drawn-out demise in 2008, but like a musician who refuses to retire, they are up for one more tour! Resurrected by political necromancer and Australian Humanist of the Year in 2008, notably not when she was involved with the party, mind you, Lynn Allison, and espousing a centrist political approach. The Legalised Cannabis Party really shouldn't surprise listeners to discover that they are very much a one-policy party. Even their website states, party policy, singular. So if you think this is an important issue, maybe consider voting for a party that has this and at least one other issue. But it's up to you. Sustainable Australia Party, formed in 2010, it describes itself as being from the political centre, in the same way that discount prices are from $99, but all of the $99 ones are already sold out, so you have to go really far from the $99 to get what you want, if you follow my meaning. While they talk about wanting more money for the arts and environment, and they have a worrying almost one-child policy focus on the number of people Australia can sustain, wanting to cap our population at 30 million until 2050, which, with the population already at 26 million, doesn't leave a lot of room for you to have children, you know, if that's your thing. Next is the Australian Values Party. Their motto here is to bring balance into the centre of Australian policies, which doesn't really make a lot of sense, as the centre is the balancing point. It is literally where balance happens. You need to have something on the left and something on the right that require balancing. So you can't really bring balance to the centre, otherwise that's just a block. But anyway, I digress. A lot of talk about the COVID mandates and wanting to bring back health practitioners who refused to follow basic health requirements during the pandemic, restructuring the entire government and reconsidering every defence deal Australia has made, all topped with a possible rolling back of gun laws. Then there's the Darren Hinch Justice Party. So former television loudmouth Darren Hinch has started his own political party, which focuses on reforms to the justice system, mostly focusing on the hardline law and order approach. While he hasn't advocated for it, Hinch himself does support capital punishment for some cases. Anti-pedophilia forms another large part of the party's ideology, owing mostly to Hinch's background in naming alleged sexual offenders, which makes for a strong case for his capital punishment judgments. The Animal Justice Party. 8 pages of policies, with around 6 of those solely focused on animals. They are like the extreme version of a one-party policy. It's just subgenres upon subgenres of different singular policy ideas. The Australian Progressives, their main focus is on ending poverty. They believe that a political plan is far more complex than left and right, but I can't think of a single right-wing or even centrist party who has the ideal to end poverty. A lot of them don't even want better welfare, so maybe they can just embrace the fact that they're somewhat to the left, but hey, it's up to them. The United Australia Party, the number one party to take advantage of the COVID health crisis to try and gain personal benefit by radicalising Australians. Apparently, Clive claims that he can get Australia out of debt with higher iron ore royalties because Asia achieves its position in the world trade by using Australian iron ore. Asian economies and industry have no alternative. So basically, he wants economic bullying to get us out of debt. And Palmer himself will totally not at all benefit, despite crowning himself the royalties king. The Socialist Alliance. Now, as the party name implies, they are ready to go from 0 to 100 on socialism. Might be a bit soon for a country that claims it loves Bernie Sanders but fails to embrace the Greens, but it is good to maybe keep them around so that they can be to the Greens what the Greens are to the Labour right now. A force to drag them to slightly more progressive ideals. The Australian Federation Party. Fringe libertarians, really. They do not support separation of religion and state, but believe in a person's right to choose a medical treatment of any sort. Apparently, Australia should establish a balanced foreign and defence policy that adopts an ethos of non-interventionalism and non-aggression. But China needs to leave Hong Kong and Taiwan, and the former USSR countries are subjected to a vote on if they want to go back in. Now, I'm not exactly sure who will enforce these ideals after we take our non-interventionalist stance, but I'm sure that they've thought it through. The Shooters, Farmers and Fishers Party, a right-leaning party who is really into shooting. It's a big part of their name. Big ideas include completely reviewing the 1996 firearms policy and being against a bunch of COVID restrictions and against mining, unless it is land that isn't nice, then ugly land can be dug up. Yeah, that's their whole thing. Ugly land can be dug up. Pretty land, don't touch it. The Citizens Party, they're very anti-bank. They're climate change deniers who have been publicly accused of brainwashing members who undergo deprogramming sessions when recruits are probed for sexual peccadilloes. Definitely someone you'd want in charge, as they are all for uniformity. They'll make sure that everybody is the same and that all of your sexual peccadilloes are known. There'll be no secrets. Then we go on to Untitled Group Number 2. So this is a former UAP candidate, Morgan C. Jonas, and anti-vaxxer Monica Smith. They decided that the UAP was not, all caps, freedom enough for them, and branched out into their own to run a political campaign, which lists a lot of anger about sovereignty, about China, about COVID, but has many holes in the policy page which have actually yet to be filled in on, non-important things like, the environment and fair elections. You don't need to worry about those things. Fusion, science, pirate, secular, climate, emergency. So this is five micro-parties coming together to form a Voltron of a party to fight religion and follow secular humanist vibes. Untitled Party Number 3 is Susan Benedica and running mate Christine Richards, who have no policies that can be found anywhere. They're just political ghosts. I have no idea what they stand or not stand for. Good luck, guys. The Great Australian Party, run by former One Nation Senator Rod Colton, who himself is potentially, I'm not sure about this, but potentially ineligible to sit due to previous legal troubles, though that may just be his business. I'm not entirely sure. I'd have to do some hardcore research to know. But he has attempted to become a sovereign citizen, and yet still wants to be a senator of a country that he insists doesn't have legal power. Interesting. The Liberal Democrats. Now, don't let the name fool you. They are neither liberal nor democratic. They want superannuation to be voluntary, because we can just trust jobs to, without question, pay wages, let alone extra money on top of that for your super. Yeah, that's totally going to be reasonable. Now, they like small government, and they cannot lie. And they would even go so far as to sell off the ABC and SBS. Then there is the Informed Medical Opinions Party, basically an anti-vax party, cosplaying as a medical freedoms party. Next, Untitled Group Number 4. Now, if you search for the name Peter Byrne or Jason Wardle, you'll see that they are associated with the Socialist Equity Party, but not much else. A vague idea of being disillusioned with the militarist and pro-business program of the Labour Party and other parties like the pseudo-left Victorian Socialists. So, make of that what you can. Speaking of the Victorian Socialists, here they are. Another party with some high ideals, trying to get Australia there a little bit faster than it's ready to embrace. Even advocating for the seizing of private hospitals for public usage. Then there is the Ungrouped, and they are a scattershot of people with different ideals. They are hard to find and very wildly, so if you are bold enough to go on this adventure on your own, remember, there will be dragons there, so stay safe and look after yourself. On to Act of God news. Climate change, the slowly warming pot of water to the unknowing frog that is humanity. Scientists, led by the UK Met Office, found the year the world breaches the 1.5 degree global heating limit set by the international governments for the first time is fast approaching, with the probability of one of the next 5 years surpassing the limit now at 50%. Although any adult who has been paying attention knows a 50% chance of irreversible climate catastrophe is still a 50% chance of not having the country burning while the other half floods, but never do the two meet. It's all a matter of if you're a climate pessimist, a climate optimist, a climate nihilist, or a climate satirist. With the regularity of 1 in 100 year events causing them to be downgraded from the once in a lifetime measurement to the new twice in a butterfly's lifetime measurement, we were going to use the more common phrase, dog's years comparison, where, you know, 7 years happens in a single year. But to be honest with you guys, Queensland and New South Wales have already beaten that record just in the last few months, so we had to up the stakes a little bit. You can Google a butterfly's lifespan. Go ahead. I know you're only half listening. If you need a reminder of the sadness of life, then Google the lifespan of a butterfly. It is depressing to be short. But due to the new system of spending as much time as possible subjecting towns to natural disasters as a means of laundering money to friendly companies rather than supporting and bolstering infrastructure, more than 500,000 properties across Australia will effectively become uninsurable this decade due to climate change. New modelling suggests that by 2030, one in every 25 properties nationally could be without cover, either because it would be refused or will be financially out of reach. That's 3.6% of all Australian properties, or roughly 521,000 sites in total, with Queensland expected to be the most uninsurable state. And not even for the usual Queensland reasons, like encroaching theme park gentrification and bin chicken attack. Insurance is, of course, a bit of a catch-22 of capitalist expenditure, where you know you're being led down the mystical path of this mysterious future calamity that may or may not happen, and really does sound like the beginning of an infomercial playing at 3 a.m. But you're like, has this ever happened to you? Well, you should have given us more money, idiot. And you know that you're being ripped off. And that even when you finally experience that disaster that you've been planning for, you come across the old force majeure clause. You know, the old act of God, get out of financial obligation free card. Which is weird because, like, in any other business besides politics, the introduction of God alongside the running of your business would not be okay, but in the insurance world, it's just like, yeah, all right, God exists, that's fine. They're the only business that really acknowledges God is not only real, but that we are beholden to his will. He does, after all, work in mysterious ways, just like insurance companies. This clause, which acknowledges God but doesn't go down the full logical path that if God exists and is responsible for the disasters of our lives, then he's also responsible for all the little things, all the everything of our everyday to day existence. Because we exist at his will and his whimsy, and he treats us like small toys in his toy chest, randomly smashing us together to see what happens next. Now, if God causes one thing to happen, then God causes all things to happen, so nothing is insurable, right? Logically, nothing is insurable. Which is clearly the end game for the insurance industry, for us to pay them to never cover our stuff, and to walk out of the office saying, ah, you got me again, God. You're so mysterious. Peter Andre should have written a song about you. It is interesting to see where we land on all this, because force majeure often covers pretty major incidents like disasters, things which are increasing due to climate change, which is in turn increasing because of Scott Morrison's government, who have pulled money out of climate technologies and have increasingly denied the very existence of a shift in climate, but who, upon being elected into office, proclaimed that it was a miracle and famously said that he believed that God put him in the position of Prime Minister. It is, in fact, the perfect time for for the Prime Minister to encourage people to take their super and use it to buy a houseboat, as there won't be a future for you to collect your super in. In fact, let's do one better. Use your super to invest in a houseboat, as that is the only future that you have coming. It's inevitable, it's destiny, because God works in mysterious ways. One can become a pirate on the high seas in the future. Sounds pretty good. But of course, I joke. The idea of the act of God is not generally considered divine intervention. No deities were consulted in the creation of this policy. No. That interpretation has since evolved into a legal shorthand of unanticipated events beyond human control. However, here's the catch. The acknowledgement of man-made climate change, which we can fix through direct action, not through company action, but through billions of individuals bearing the weight of the hard work, like we always have. With that acceptance comes consequence. The everyday person must recycle their cans and suffer paper straws. Well, insurance companies should no longer be able to claim that natural disasters were unprecedented, that the consequences were unpredictable, and that the increased occurrences impossible to foresee, as they are becoming increasingly common. We have seen for years that climate scientists have been on the sideline saying, "Yeah, I wouldn't do that if I were you. It's not gonna be good." And the rest of us have just shouted at them from the party that the rest of humanity was having, being like, "Shut it, nerds!" and crunched a beer can with our heads and deliberately threw it into the wrong bin so that we could watch the sad nerds cry. But now, man-made climate change is real. It exists. We have the power of life and death in our very hands, simply by using plastic straws and subsidizing multinational coal and fossil fuel companies and quietly crushing innovation in sectors that could save the planet. See, Nietzsche was right all along. Acts of God are dead. Life is all man-made power systems, so just grow a giant mustache and live in a houseboat brought from your plundered future finances. It'll be the first step towards your new life of piracy, as you ruthlessly rob from your future self for the now. And that's it for another episode of Bearer of Weird News. Thanks so much for listening. Thanks so much for sticking around to the end. If you enjoyed it, please share it with a friend. Put it in places where you think people will enjoy it. Share it online. Reddit or social media or wherever you think people will take joy from this. Once again, if you are able to and if you want to come out to see my shows at the Edinburgh Fringe, remember it's a free festival, so you can pay what you want at the end of the show. There'll be a little bucket, just chuck some money in there. I've come a long way, so a little bit of money would be nice, but give what you can. I know the times are tough, and I'll be in Albany doing a show, and tickets are only $25, so if you want to come out and check out the show, I'm looking forward to it. I think it'll be a great time, and I'm looking forward to touring more and getting around. Thanks, look after yourselves, get your vaccines, get your boosters, and get back out into the world.